And do you know how many people would probably, like, run away at the sight of dismembered legs?
Yeah. Dude, there's a 4-foot bong and a bag of wheat by your bed.
Tiddlywinks, the parlor game for nerds, is nearing extinction.
It's in my pod! It's in my pod!
I will find proof.
I'm very easily startled, Mr. Fingerman. I don't know which regulation body would regulate the penis ring that you were talking about earlier.
I'm ready to remain conscious as we record this show.
Hello, welcome to Medical Stuff. My name is Mark. You're not fucking Chris Frankham, and you're Spencer Crash Oliver. How are you doing today, buddy?
Just bumping around here and there. Yeah.
Spencer's partner may or may not have had a small ringy ding with another car on shift today. So.
Yeah, it happens.
How you been, man?
Oh, I've been well. Just, floating around here and there.
So, anything big going on in your life?
I've hit middle age because I bought a lukewarm car, Toyota Corolla, and I'm excited about that.
Does it have the Bluetooth connection for the stereo?
It does have the Bluetooth connection.
You're going to love that. You're going to love that.
See, I had that in my, I had a Toyota Matrix, and I had a little adapter that I would plug in.
This is so much better.
So I got to listen to my music via the Bluetooth adapter, mm-hmm. but, yeah, I feel like this is going
to
be better.
Well, the thing is, you don't have to deal with any charge, you don't have to deal with any cords, you don't have to deal with anything.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Talking about middle age, right?
Yeah.
On the seat of a call, just recently with a guy who's like 32, 33.
All right.
And we're running a,
a young buck.
Depends on who you are. that's important. We're right here in the story in a few minutes. So we're running a 15-year-old.
Okay.
Who had a syncopal episode. Syncopal episode. Right?
Yeah.
We walk up. There's an old off-duty medic guy. Yeah, I did the eye flicker thing with the eyelashes and didn't pass that.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, fair enough. So we get there. In the back of the rig, this is a band tournament, marching band tournament.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So this person is up here, is in the area, from out of the area. Oh, down by you. Comes from Eugene.
Okay.
And is, no parents.
Yeah.
Right. So, talk to the band instructor, band leader. I'm like, look, you know what I mean? You're the one legally responsible for the patient. So it's your call. Because the patient doesn't want to go to the hospital. And it's your call. Whatever you want to do, if you're willing to sign the refusal. Mm-hmm. Then you are right now, you are the patient's legal guardian right now. Let me call the mom. So mom's like, take him to the hospital. Okay.
Sure.
But, and patient is pissed. They're going to the hospital. Like, temper tantrum kind of kicked the shoes off in the corner.
Yeah.
So my partner sitting beside the patient, 33 years old, right?
Yeah.
Tried to do the, hey man, buddy, buddy, kind of tone to the voice.
Yeah.
Short of, like, turning the hat around and turning the chair around to sit on it. So you
sup,
can show the...
sup, bro.
He's like, hey, man, I know you don't want to go to the hospital, but, you know, I think you understand why we need to go to the hospital. And I started chuckling. And then he's like, as he's getting out, he says that, and he goes to get out. And he's like, what? I go, you realize we're just two old dudes. He goes, I'm not that old. Compared to the 15-year-old, you're no different than I am. And yes, I'm significant. I'm like 18 years, 15 years older than you. But you're just some old dude that's talking to him now, just so you know.
Yeah.
I don't think, hey man, is he old or not? Yeah, he's old.
Don't you kind of want to be like, high five?
Exactly. Like,
thank you.
Yeah, I was just like, yeah, so talking about hitting middle age. I think that really kind of struck home with him, that he was no longer the cool kind of 20-year-old buddy pal. He's now a dad figure.
I remember when Spice, like, I first heard of Spice.
Remember the synthetic
marijuana. That
the incense that you could buy legally.
Yeah, like, and some
for
dude,
9 days.
Yeah, like, we went on some guy's tachycardic at 180. He's altered. He's sweaty. And, you know, like, he's just, like,
Spice
out of his
mind. Bad shit, man.
Dude, it's horrible. He's out of his mind in his parents' house upstairs. And I'm going, like, and somebody's like, oh, yeah, he smokes Spice. And I was like,
oregano?
Yeah, like, what do you mean Spice? Like, and I'm imagining, like, I don't know, like paprika and like pepper.
Somebody
sold him
a bad diet or something.
Like,
you know?
What do you mean spice? And like they were like spice, and I was like, I don't. like looking around.
I understand the word you're saying to me. I don't know what it means.
And we dropped him off at the hospital, and I was like, I guess he smoked spice. And someone was like, oh, that's bad. And I was like, okay, what?
I'm like, oh, I'm amongst friends now. I can actually show my ignorance.
I don't know what that is. I'm like, I went to an outpatient when I was younger, like a kid. I went to like an outpatient drug store. Like I knew drugs. Like I, you know, like, and if I didn't, like I went to a place where other people did. So you like know a lot about that stuff. And then, here I am in my adult life, going like, I don't.
I've never heard of such a thing.
I've never heard of this.
So, anyway, so today we're actually going to be talking about something a little bit different. That was just a fun side story. Today we're going to be talking about airways.
ABCs.
The A.
Oh.
The A of ABCs. How do we maintain some A?
That is the question, isn't
right.
it?
Funnily enough, not the first letter of the CPR algorithm anymore.
No.
It's now CAB.
No, they messed that up.
Yeah.
ABC had its own thing. ABC stands for airway, breathing, circulation. Unless you want to play with it a little bit, then it stands for always be cool. And so in CPR, cool be always isn't...
Which I think by our two previous stories, we have not always been cool.
Or cool always be. Mm-hmm. Seems sort of Yoda-ish. It doesn't have the same sort of flow to it.
So when we talk about your airway, we're talking about making sure that we can get air from the outside.
Yes.
To the inside of your lungs.
Seems important.
At some point.
Yeah. And it's not really about the breathing part of that. So it's not, it's really just about the
patency.
Yeah, the patency, the ability for air to travel to those lungs.
So you have a brief anatomy.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Spencer.
Well, you've got this mouth hole, and that leads to a throat hole, which bifurcates.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So you're going to go with mouth hole and throat hole, but then throughout bifurcate.
Yeah, mix it up a little. And one of those holes goes down, one of those tubes anyway, goes down to the temiculus.
Are you just making shit up?
That's like 90% of what I do. So, and then the other one goes into, what is this? How do you pronounce trachea?
Yes.
Trachea.
There you go.
Goes into your trachea, which leads down to the lungs.
Right. So we're talking about maintaining an opening from the mouth to the trachea.
Yeah. Yeah.
So indications for breathing, maintaining this, is in the inability of the patient to maintain a patent airway. And there's a lot of reasons for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the best airway is the one that the patient can maintain on their own. But failing that, if they're unable or unwilling to do so, then we need to provide...
We are willing to do it for them.
We're willing to do it for them. So, like Mark was saying, patients who are just so deeply unconscious that they can't stop, for instance, their tongue.
Nice.
Yes. We're on the big words tonight.
I had to defend myself after bifurcate. You know,
that's
fair.
If they're so obtunded that their tongue, for instance, could slide back and block their throat.
Well, in all reality, because people have heard, he's choking on his tongue.
Sure.
You cannot actually choke on your tongue. Your tongue does not ever fall back to the point where it's blocking the airway.
That's true.
But it can relax back so it covers the airway.
Yes. Yes. So, the only way you could choke on your tongue if somebody gave you a tongue to choke on.
If it was actually separated from your mouth, because it's tied down.
Yes.
Well. Also the strongest muscle in the body. I heard somewhere and have nothing to back that up with.
That's fair.
Okay.
That's fair. There's an inappropriate joke there somewhere. Sure it is. But, yeah, we'll leave that aside.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do when we maintain a patent airway is we're trying to keep the patient from aspirating, which is where they inhale anything other than air into their lungs.
The things we really worry about are, for instance, vomit. Mm-hmm. They inhale their own vomit, or if vomit just happens to decide to travel down the trachea, it gets into the lungs. Your lungs really don't like vomit.
Your lungs really don't have a real wide range of things that it interacts with well.
vomit is, and you know, so all food. Sorts of food.
Have you ever tried to get scrambled eggs out of an airway with a pair of McGill forceps?
No, but I
does not work.
Ice cream. We were at a hospital today, and a piece of bacon was removed from someone's airway.
Nice. How big?
I don't know.
Oh,
the medics who delivered this person who was in pretty severe respiratory distress
and happy all at the same time.
Actually brought in with a smile because I saw them come in and then they came out and they're like, they just pulled bacon from this person's throat.
I mean, we all like bacon, but come on, dude.
And I was wondering if it was crispy or soft.
It's a...
The bacon.
Never heard of it.
Crispy or soft? You've never heard of crispy or soft bacon?
No. I feel like I should Google this real quick.
No. It's bacon that is done crispy and firm, or bacon that is soft and broiled in its own
juices. Oh, I thought you were talking about a brand name or something.
No. This is just the two different styles.
I thought you were saying crispy or soft.
No, right. That's, yeah.
I heard that. I thought it was a brand name. Moving on.
Okay.
Failure to ventilate. Go ahead.
This deals more with the person's ability to breathe. If they're failing to breathe adequately on their own, and there's some lab values that go along with that, usually like a high end tidal CO2,
which is the air that you breathe out.
Exactly.
So if you have too much of carbon dioxide as you're exhaling, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, and carbon dioxide's acidic, so it can sort of alter your blood or your body's pH to have too much on board.
And the pH is your acidity level in your bloodstream, and you have a very narrow acceptable level of that for your body.
I wish you guys had talked about that in some episode, but I know you haven't. We're not linking back to it on this episode.
We're not doing that this episode.
No callbacks.
Hashtag vascular. Anyway. So we have some devices from very simple to much more complex.
Oh, we also have a couple more items on this list before we hop into that.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So on the other side of that is failure to oxygenate. So if a person's breathing, but they are not, for whatever reason, actually getting adequate oxygenation, which is also important, then...
We had a lady who was borderline cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
And we could not get her oxygen saturation up above 70%, even with a King Airway.
Yeah.
And 100% O2 and everything like that. We took her in. She sat in the 40s in the ER for her saturation. So your saturation level should be as close to 100 as possible because it's done on a percentage basis.
Yeah.
So you really want anything above 90, we're happy with. And an adult, you know, and a kid, you really want a kind of high 90s.
Yeah. I mean, the perfect number is 94.
Right.
But
we're happy with 90.
Yeah.
91. Some people sit in the high 80s, depending on the medical history they have. So this lady was otherwise healthy, like 34-year-old female.
Yeah.
So we find out the next day, we go back, we check on her. She had so many mucus plugs in her lungs.
Oh, wow.
That she just could not oxygenate, even though we were giving her 100% oxygen. They blocked so many of the bronchus that they spent 2 hours pulling these out with a bronchoscope.
Oh, wow.
Three different times.
That feels like such the coolest job. Right. Just like, we're going to go in, we're going to find like the Dr. Pimple Popper site.
Right, exactly. Just like
going in here with this thing, and we're going to pull all this stuff out.
Just right. Like, oh, yeah. It's like the most sci-fi thing you can do at the hospital, pretty much. So.
All right. And then I think one last thing is... to touch on it for when EMS or the hospital might decide to...
Other medical people.
Those other people who don't really count. decide to take an airway or,
No, we say take an airway. What we mean is take control of the airway.
Exactly. Manage the airway. I don't want
you to think we're just like, okay, that's it. This is mine.
This is mine now. You don't get this anymore. You have lost your airway privileges.
And you will get them back when I feel you've earned them.
2 weeks. Exactly. 2 weeks, no airway.
You sit here and think about what you've done, okay?
Think about this.
So we have some from basic to complex ways of controlling somebody's airway. One of the first ones we're going to talk about is oral airways.
Yes.
So this is basically a piece of plastic shaped like a question mark.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah.
Not full curve question mark. Imagine you took a question mark and cut off the left-hand side of it.
Yeah, you just kind of narrowed it down.
Right.
Like you were trying to squeeze a question, like you wrote a sign and you just didn't leave enough room at the end for a question mark, and you're like, I need it in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what this does is it actually goes into the oral cavity or the mouth hole, as Spencer has eloquently deemed it.
Yep.
Now we measure this from the
corner of the mouth to the little lobe dangly bit of the
corner of the mouth to the tip of the ear.
Yep.
Right. And then there's two different ways of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the most accepted way of inserting it is to turn it 90 degrees from the way the mouth is going.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, it's going to be in line with the slit of the mouth. Then you go in, you turn it 90 degrees towards the trachea, thereby holding that way we talked earlier about the tongue kind of getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it holds that out of the way. So as we breathe for the patient with a bag valve mask, it allows air to move in and out.
Absolutely.
So some of the pros of this, or the indications, would be a patient who is unconscious.
Just
straight up.
Yep. Unconscious to the point where they don't have a gag reflex.
Right. They're out.
They're super out. Or, as Chris might say, if he were here, super duper out.
Right.
But he's not here.
Right. He abandoned us. By the way, Chris should be back eventually. He's gone to a farm to live for a bit. He's supposed to have plenty of room to run. And he's going to lead out his life happily there.
That's right. There's a rainbow bridge to get to this farm. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
No, it's Christmas time. Christmas has got a lot of personal things going on. On top of Christmas and everything else, apparently they're remodeling a bathroom.
Oh, God. That sounds like hell. Merry Christmas. Fix this toilet.
So there's really pretty much the only contraindication for this would be a gag reflex.
Absolutely.
Because
then they might vomit
and aspirate
.
Because nice tie back in there.
This really doesn't protect. Really, what this does is allow somebody to if we're going to breathe for the person, we're going to put a bag valve mask over their mouth and try and breathe for them. And this really just helps open that airway so that we can deliver those breaths to the lungs instead of down the other tube. Which takes to the stomach, which is where all the stomach contents sit.
And which, if you overfill that, they tend to vomit.
Yeah, it tends to come up.
And we're back to aspiration.
And then we've sort of created a problem. But so this really, and it does make a difference. I've seen people try and bag without one, and I've seen people bag with one, and it's noticeable.
On the same patient.
On the same patient, and it's noticeable.
Yeah. So after oral airways, we have a nasal airway.
These are my favorite airways.
We can't tell why.
Well,
they're also called nasal trumpets because they're a long, thin piece of rubber with a flare at the end so it doesn't disappear down into their airway. We like to call it a stopper.
The stopper.
Exactly. Send it to the stopper.
Because that would be pretty embarrassing. Like, well, we put in the nasal airway. Where is it?
Yeah, it's in there somewhere.
Well, funny story.
Where I worked in Oklahoma, we'll talk about ET tubes a little bit, but we did nasal tubes.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things you learned pretty quick was on an ET tube, there's a little part that, like, it's not a string, it's a little plastic tube that has where you inject air into a cuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you learn to tape that down separately from the rest of the tube because the ET tube, if it disappeared south, you could use that to pull it back.
Oh, yeah. You come back here.
Exactly. So...
Nice.
So the nasal airway, what does it look like? Like I said, long, thin piece of rubber. You measure it from the?
You measure it from the end of the nose here. What is that?
The nair.
The nair?
Right.
Yeah, the nair.
Corner of the nair to the tip of the ear.
Tip.
Yeah.
Yeah, to the dangly ear bit.
He's in charge of people's lives, people. That's it.
It's true.
I like how you brushed into your nose and said right about here on an audio format.
That's right. Well, because I knew you would come in with the assist.
Right.
Yeah. All right, let's take this tube thing and put it in their nose hole. And try putting one of those question marks in their mouth hole.
So one of the indications for this, again, is a patient who's unconscious.
Yeah.
It's basically another way of opening up the airway through the nostrils so you can get better airflow through. I know one of the big pushes right now, like in cardiac arrest, is to put in bilateral nasal trumpets.
Oh, yeah.
And then hook a nasal cannula up to it so that air is being unimpeded, sent down into the lungs while you're pre-oxygenating for intubation.
One of the great things about this is if you have somebody who is unconscious or who is feigning unconsciousness, because that does happen. When you are managing their airway and the unresponsive person, they might perchance wake up when you place said trumpet. Have you ever put in one of these on yourself or like a friend?
No.
So I may or may not have come across some expired equipment at some point in my career. And a friend of mine and I were pondering as to, it's like, well, we can't use this on patients. Obviously, right. It's expired. Have you ever put one in, man? No, I haven't put one in. And so we decided to try it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I went first because I was curious and stupid. And it hurt
really?
A lot. We lubed shit out of this thing because I was like, well, come on, let's be. We picked the smallest size. He went to place that thing, and I didn't get very far, and I was like, stop, oh God. And then I went, all right, man, like, you want, and he's like, no, I'm good.
So basically, Spencer hangs out with people who are much smarter than him.
That's, yeah.
So, I've seen these things work wonders for trying to get air into a patient. Now, there are some contraindications, one of them being an active gag reflex, again.
Yeah, but
it's not as pronounced.
It's not as pronounced, and part of that might be a sizing issue. If you have one that's really long, then it can you know.
It can actually tickle the back of the throat. Spencer's done for the podcast. But anyway. So just so you know, we've both been working today. Neither of us have been drinking. We've been on shift all day long.
I've been up since 3:30.
So another contraindication is basilar skull fractures.
Yeah.
Why is there an eye roll on this?
Because there actually isn't any data to support this.
A basilar skull fracture would be a fracture at the base of the skull at the back. The fear is, apparently unfounded, is that you could have an internal hemorrhage because of this fracture and that the nasal trumpet may deviate into the brain. Or the cranial cavity.
There is an alarming picture on the internet of what, you know, some people have claimed is a nasal trumpet. It's actually an NG tube that was, which is a tube that goes from your nose down into your stomach, and they can use that for, you know, feeding and suctioning and all of that good stuff. But it's not an NG tube, and it does go into it's not a nasal airway, and it does go into the skull cavity, but
the tube is distinctly longer.
There is a lot of it in there.
Right.
There are to the best that I could find, there are no. It's really more of a we don't
it
want
to. It could happen.
It could, I guess, but there's never been any actual evidence.
Seems like the things that would need to the stars that would need to align for this to happen would be.
It would be pretty incredible.
So
it'd be pretty incredible last day.
Right. Exactly.
But
boy, with an epic story.
Boy.
Also, one of the reasons why you're not supposed to use an ET tube on basilar skull fractures.
Yeah.
Which the ET tube is distinctly longer and it is more structured to it.
Oh, but if you're for nasal tracheal intubations in that case,
Yeah. So moving on from there, we're gonna talk about King Airways.
Yeah.
So the King Airway, this is a laryngeal tube, also known as the King LT, is an airway management device designed as an alternative to other airway management techniques such as bag valve mask ventilation, which we talked about. Which, for anybody who's taking CPR, even the citizen one, this would be like the mouth-to-mask. A bag valve mask is basically, you're not breathing into it with your own lungs, you're using a big bag to squeeze air into the patient.
A balloon, if you will.
Ooh, yes. The laryngeal mask airway, or tracheal intubation, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Device can be blindly inserted through the oropharynx into the hypopharynx to create an airway during anesthesia or CPR, although there's some studies that say that during CPR is no bueno for King Airway. We'll get to that in just a second. So this is basically a little more aggressive type of oral airway or nasal airway.
Mm.
It actually you push it in. It's really weird because it's the one time you let go of an airway.
Yeah.
I mean, you're trained and beaten and browbeat by your instructors to never let go of an airway.
Yes.
Until they came out with the King Airways. So you slide this into a certain depth.
Yep.
They're sized by how tall the patient is.
Yep.
Whether they're under 5 foot, 5 to 6 foot, or over 6 foot for adults, and they're different colors.
Yes. And then they have color-coded, I think it's weight-based for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, if you're between 5 and 6 foot, and you use which color?
The one that says 5 to 6 foot.
Red. I hope.
I hope.
use a red one, you insert it to a certain point, and then you inflate a cuff that's at the end of it.
Yes.
And you let go of it because it will seat itself.
Yep.
Meaning it will form to the trachea and move into the correct position. Now, once you do that, you do hold on to it after that, and you secure it in place.
Yes.
So this takes about 60 cc's of air.
Yeah.
To fill up. The pros?
It's very fast.
It is very fast.
And you don't need to stop CPR if you're doing CPR.
Right.
You don't need to. It's essentially, I would say, as close to 100% success rate as you could get. There are
failures.
There have been failures where the balloons rupture.
Right.
But those are also pretty recognizable.
Those have been addressed by the King company. We're not downgrading them here. This, because we talk about balloon failures, we're not talking structural integrity things. We're talking like getting caught on teeth.
Yep. Yes.
So, I mean, it's something that's, you know, the product's just fine, but life happens.
Yes. We're not, you know? we're not crapping on the product.
No, not at all. So also it can be used by just about any level of provider.
That's true.
From EMT all the way up through doctors.
Yeah.
And with minimal training versus like learning how to intubate somebody.
Yes.
This is, you can learn on a mannequin.
Yep.
And basically, as part of a day course, you can learn how to put one of these in.
It's very nice.
Yes. So some of the cons.
Well, one of the cons is that what it does is it blocks off the esophagus with a distal tip balloon that inflates. Mm-hmm. And it seats itself in the mouth, preventing, and the idea is that it stops air from going down into your stomach, and it stops air from escaping through the mouth, which essentially means that the only place left for a breath to go once you breathe into the tube forum is down into the trachea. But it doesn't actually block off that doesn't ensure that air will be delivered into the trachea.
Right. Also, I mean, it's not a totally secure airway.
Yes.
An ET tube is considered a definitive airway.
Yeah.
Would you say it's a definitive airway?
Definitely definitive.
Yeah. Yeah. Hashtag Chris. Chris may not be on any more shows because he may have just had a stroke. So, and if you want to learn about strokes, listen to our stroke episode.
No, that's not happening. No.
No throwbacks. So one of the advantages of an ET tube, which we'll get into here in a little bit, is you can push medications, which is becoming a little less in vogue. It's become, when I started on a cardiac arrest, your first drug, two rounds of drugs went down the tube.
Yeah. I remember learning about it and they essentially said like, it probably doesn't work. And now everyone's pretty solidly on like, yeah, don't do that.
Well, also the thing is that we've had improvements in, IVs. And IOs, the ability to do IOs pre-hospital, we didn't have that before. If you want to learn about IVs or IOs,
no.
Last week's episode.
Yep.
Last week's episode.
Damn it.
So there's also been some studies, one in 2012 and one in 2015. The one in 2012 was a porcine study.
Oh, okay.
Which means it's done on pigs.
Oh, okay.
Or I guess porcine. Porcine?
Porky.
Pigs. Got
Porky
it.
Study.
Where they showed on these pigs that with the pressure that's put on the hypopharynx, that it's actually decreasing cerebral blood flow.
Mm.
And so one of the things you're trying to do in CPR is get blood to the brain.
That's true.
And this can actually cause a decrease in that blood flow to the brain.
Interesting.
And then in 2015, there was a human study done in the UK.
Okay.
Where they actually sedated people that were going in for surgeries.
Yeah.
And they would actually monitor their blood flow, and they found something similar.
Gotcha. They just did the PARTS study here, which was a pragmatic study done on CPR, like real-life CPR patient. That's a weird statement, real-life CPR patient.
Right.
life is...
If we do things right.
And they found that in these cases, there were better results with the king, but there's some caveats to that that should probably be explained further. But that was one study that was favorable to the king.
It is. For getting an airway quickly, you can't beat it.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of where it comes down to is
I say we can't beat it. Of the equipment that's available to us in the pre-hospital setting.
Yes.
Can't be beat.
Yeah.
Because I think eye gels are pretty quick, too.
Eye gels are pretty quick.
You know. So, there's equipment that, I mean, we can't carry all of this equipment.
Absolutely.
A, it'd get very heavy.
Yes.
B, it's also very expensive.
Yeah.
And so we choose, well, it is chosen for us by our medical directors.
Yeah.
You know, what we're going to be carrying and what we're going to be using. Plus, with training and everything, it's, I mean, when you have hundreds of paramedics in a system.
Yeah. One of the systems I'm working at in is considering switching to all eye gels. That was a topic that came up.
Is that the Whirly Bird?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, there's nothing wrong with it.
No.
So.
No.
So yeah, those are some of the cons of the Combi or the King Airway.
Yeah.
So next, we're going to go back into history. We're going to jump in the Wayback Machine.
Oh.
Actually, this isn't even the Wayback Machine. This is the a little bit back machine. This is the Combi Tube. Did you ever use a Combi Tube?
No, I remember the first EMT course I took, which was in 2006. Yeah, probably. That was like, no basics can do this. This is advanced stuff right here. And then they finally decided, like, you know what? This is actually probably a good thing for basics to do.
It is.
But they were concerned that, of course, and fairly, I mean, looking back at it, that people would mess up. Because Combi tubes are a little more complicated than they are. Airway.
So this is a dual lumen airway.
Yes.
So basically, Spencer talked about the bifurcation of the airway going through the trachea and to the esophagus.
Yeah.
Correct? This was a blind technique.
Yes.
That you could hit either, and it worked for either.
But you kind of had to be able to determine if you were in the right spot.
Right.
So they came out with, it mimics a King airway in that,
kind of,
in that it's got a distal balloon,
mm-hmm.
which in ideal situations would seat itself in the esophagus.
95% of the time it was recommended or considered that you would probably hit the esophagus.
That's like, this is probably where you'll end up.
Right.
So
yeah, the balloon inflated.
Yep.
And it plugged up the esophagus.
And then the mouth balloon stopped air from escaping through the mouth.
Right.
And so you would start bagging into
In between those two would be holes.
Oh, yes.
The esophageal portion of the dual lumens.
Yep.
You'd have holes there. So when you bag, air came out through those holes.
In the top two lumens? Lumens.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Tube one went to the holes that would breathe, assuming...
If you're in the esophagus.
If you're in the esophagus. And the other one went through the little...
ET tube section.
Which
stands for endotracheal, which we're going to get endotracheal intubation here in a minute. But, so if you got blind, stupid, lucky, and got it in the trachea, it would work like an ET tube.
Yep.
Here's the problem. This thing was the size of a horse throat. I mean, we carry... done by millimeters, correct? The sizing of the tubes?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
You know,
millimeters.
Yeah. But there's like, is it millimeters?
Yeah.
Okay. So we go from like 2.5, from 2.5 all the way up to, generally most places carry an 8.5 or a 9.0.
I've seen a 9.0. That's a big.
That is a big tube.
Don't put that in my
throat. This was about a 9.5. So it was a huge tube. So, yeah, you had a 5% chance of getting it into the trachea. But, man, if you did, you're doing some damage.
Yeah, this thing was
huge. And the thing was, the steps were, you get it in, you inflate the first bulb.
Yep.
If you're in the trachea and you inflate that bulb, you could rupture the trachea.
Yeah.
But I think the point was, if you start injecting the air into that distal bulb, and you met a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
Stop. But so anyway, this was what we had before King Airways.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you couldn't get an ET tube or if you weren't licensed or certified to do endotracheal intubation, mm-hmm. this was better than nothing.
Yeah. I think the definite advantage for the King over the Combi tube is that it's just simpler. I think, yeah. And that's really where
because literally, so you would insert this thing, you'd insert the first bulb, which would be the distal end down to the esophagus, hopefully. Then you insert a very large balloon at the mouth end that was supposed to fill up the entire oral pharynx.
Yep.
So air couldn't come out through the nose or the mouth or anything. And then you had to bag on tube one to see if you got lung sounds.
Yes.
And if you didn't, you would then move to bag number or tube number two.
Yep.
And see if you get lung sounds there.
Yeah.
Whoops. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was not a perfect piece of equipment.
No.
But it was the follow-up to what was called the EOA. Did you even learn about EOAs?
I have never even heard of EOA.
So the esophageal obturator airway.
Oh.
Look up a picture of this thing.
I'm going to right now.
So basically what this is, this was brought out, I believe if I remember correctly, like in the late 70s, early 80s. It was a long tube, looked like an ET tube.
Yeah.
Had a distal end bulb, and it was completely blocked off. Okay? So then you would insert this in blindly down to a certain point, and then you would fit a mask over this tube would fit through basically what would be like a bag valve mask.
Okay.
And then halfway up the tube were holes. And so, what would happen is you'd insert this, you'd inflate the distal cuff, you'd hook on your BVM, you'd make your EC clamp, which is the hand motion that you use to, or the hand positioning you use to seal the mask on the face, and then you would bag the patient. Here's the problem. It wasn't that much better than BVMing. About the only thing it did was block off the esophagus.
Gotcha.
But airway path of least resistance, so unless you got a really good seal on the distal end and you got a really good seal on the mouth end, that doesn't mean the air is going to go into the lungs.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of extra spacing in there, and air will compress.
And I think everyone sort of overestimates the ability to get a mask seal.
Yes.
That is the... I will tell you, that is one of the hardest things to do, especially single rescue.
Yeah, it should be done with two people. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing is also, as you squeeze the bag, even if you've got a good distal seal and you've got a good mouth seal, if you have anything restricting the airway whatsoever, what's going to happen is that air compresses.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to necessarily push the air into the lungs. It may just compress in the back of the airway.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
You know, okay. So it's not actually, there's no real good solid guarantee of how much or if you're getting any air actually into the lungs at that point.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, yeah, that was the EOA. That was, I was taught the EOA when I first took my EMT basic, and then they were quickly replaced by combi tubes.
Oh, gotcha. Now, I imagine this probably has the same, the EOA probably has the same contraindications that, for instance, the King and combi tube both have.
Which are?
Esophageal varices.
Yes, and also caustic ingestion.
Yes.
So
that makes sense.
Because, if the person tries to vomit it up, it's just going to sit in the esophagus.
Yeah.
The pros of this, again, this was really the first, it's better than a BVM by itself. This was the first generation of which King Airways and IGLs are the second and third generation, or third and fourth generation kind of things. The advantages were, like King Airway, like combi tubes, minimal amounts of training and upkeep of training for people who don't have, are not paramedics.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And even for paramedics. But EMTs and other levels of certification, first responders can use these without having to go through the whole training of ET tube, which is a long and in-depth process.
Yeah. Have you talked about esophageal varices and
so on? I don't think so. No.
Oh, okay.
Why don't you put something out there?
All right. So esophageal varices for the uninitiated are essentially something that occurred. They're like varicose veins, but that go along your esophagus. And what happens here is in people with liver disease, often seen in like chronic alcoholics, blood has trouble returning and going through the hepatic system, the liver. And so it starts backing up, and these veins in the esophagus can bulge. And it actually it really can be a life-ending problem, especially if one of these ruptures, because you can bleed out we've gone on patients who are severely bleeding, you know, who need blood transfusions, and they can't really tamponade it. It's very difficult to manage. And so it would be just really, it would be a bad day if you put a tube in their throat and suddenly you're like, oh man, then now we're on, we got an airway, but like,
yeah, also they're bleeding out.
Now they're bleeding out.
Well, we touched on that. We talked about,
you have failed the cool part of exactly. Always be cool.
So we have talked about, hi Ralph, how you doing? How do you pronounce that word?
It's definitely
Venicava.
So we talked about varicose veins in a previous episode. I touched on them about how it looks like somebody's like gutted a deer with one of those pops.
It does look like a murder scene.
It does. The very first time I saw it was a guy who was down in an elevator, and the entire elevator floor was covered with blood, and it was running off in the gap between the elevator and the floor that we were on.
Yeah.
There was a little lady who in the house looked like blood just sprayed against the wall.
Did I just walk into The Shining? Exactly. What's going on?
Yeah. And literally, you put a finger on it, and it'll stop bleeding.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a tough bleed to stop, but when it goes, man, it goes.
It is funny when people, like, they're like, it's an arterial bleed, because it sprays, and you're, and that's what you're thought, and it's like,
boop. Yeah.
Soft.
Exactly. You know, yeah, I mean, but there's a lot of blood. So if this happens in your esophagus where you just can't, boop, you know, yeah. That's problematic. People die from these things being ruptured.
Yeah. So, you know, putting in an airway to protect that would potentially
aggravate that
is
problematic.
You don't get pro points.
Right. So, but unfortunately for us, a lot of times these patients don't necessarily have a diagnosis of esophageal varices, so we don't know these things. Or
that's
if they
true.
Do, they're unconscious to the point they can't tell us about it.
Yeah. And that's sort of where you kind of have to be a little bit suspect if you go on somebody who's, or if you respond, or if you take care of somebody who's, you know, got a history of, like, chronic alcoholism, mm-hmm. and has, you know, like, clearly has, like, you know, liver failure, or, mm-hmm. you know, like, then you kind of, you keep that in the back of your mind.
Now, we're talking about esophageal varices for the liver failure, not varicose veins.
Yes. Yeah. If they have varicose veins,
they probably have jobs standing a lot.
You probably safe to put in a king airway.
Right.
Probably.
And if you are putting in a king airway, something went seriously wrong on the call.
Yeah, don't quote me on that.
So next up, we're actually going to talk about the eye gels.
Yes.
So you've actually played with these?
We have to practice. We have infant and neonate eye gels where I work. So we practice airway management once a month at our base, and that's one of the things.
So what does it look like?
It's,
and if you start saying things like it's about this long and this big around, I'm gonna punch you.
Well, I was gonna say it's about this long and this big around, and I mean it looks exactly like this picture that I'm holding
exactly.
up. So
it's kind of a long, well, almost looks like an old phone handle.
I'm sorry, what?
Telephones when they still had tails.
What?
Nothing. Nothing, right?
Oh, you
nothing.
Mean like the charge cord?
No. Like at the hospitals. We have to call the charge nurse.
Oh, yeah. So
that thing that's like mounted on the wall.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's what it kind of reminds me of. I could be wrong. Okay, I got to come up with a better reference.
That's fair.
See,
that's
now
fair.
I'm just the old guy in the room.
Yeah, so what this supposedly does is it's sort of a thin plastic, like soft plastic, you know, hollowed tube.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, it almost has what would be like a soft, like almost like a soft mask.
Okay.
You know, like, yeah.
So yeah, it's basically a soft mask that sits over the airway.
Yeah. And ideally this, and what it does is it also forms, with the heat from the mouth, supposedly.
The gel.
Yeah. And then just sort of secures that airway.
The body heat, yeah. It's form fitting as opposed to maybe the king airway, which is more, is not.
You're really relying on the balloon to,
right.
The distal balloon to stop air from going further.
Right.
But it doesn't form fit around. Yeah.
How much success do people have with these?
You know, I don't know the success rate, mm-hmm. honestly. I know that in the ORs that they're liked.
Mm-hmm.
I've
always seen it as, personally, and I could be wrong, having never used one,
yeah.
that in a hospital setting, I bet they're amazing. Yeah. I just don't know how well they work in the more rough and tumble. I'm not saying that like, hey,
sure.
But I mean, when you're, there's a difference between having a patient secured on a gurney in an OR with plenty of people around you versus dropping one of these on in the upstairs bedroom of a PATH person or even a clean person and having to get them down the stairs, out the front door, yeah, onto the gurney, bouncing down the road in the back of the ambulance.
Yeah, I don't have any anecdotal practical experience other than, you know, practicing on dummies, and they work well on the dummies,
right,
that I practice on. It might be one of those things that, mm-hmm, suffers the same thing that a lot of EMS stuff suffers.
Oxford University Press,
mm-hmm,
the primary IHL success rate without changing size was 93%.
Okay.
And the overall success rate was 96%. And insertion was deemed very easy or easy in 92% of the uses,
yeah,
of the study. And it says it's a reliable supraglottic airway device failing in less than 5% and providing high airway leak pressures.
Nice.
And that was 2012.
Okay.
So
in
the hospital, I don't know how well it would work in the pre-hospital setting.
Yeah. And I mean, that's sort of the problem that EMS has, is that there are...
Nobody makes stuff for us.
No, but, well, there's a lot of stuff that is applied to EMS because it works in the hospital, mm-hmm, but it does not work as well in the field.
Right.
There's definitely studies now that are more like that are focused specifically on EMS. And you know, there are trials and you know, stuff along those lines. But that's historically, it's like you said, it's like this works great in the hospital. Mm-hmm. This will definitely work well in a non-hospital setting.
A lot of stuff we've talked about, mask pants. So they use those in the hospital, but it worked great in the setting they were designed for, but not quite that great in the setting that we're using them in.
Yeah.
So I swear that our current monitors, cardiac monitors, great monitors, but they were designed for hospital use.
Yeah.
And then, hey, these are portable. They could use those in pre-hospital settings. You know, and so...
Yeah.
It's...
How much do they think they weigh?
Our cardiac monitors?
Yeah.
No, I know how much they weigh. They weigh 21 pounds because I may have been at a PetSmart on a call. And the patient was doing fine.
Yes.
And so I'm standing there and I'm weighing all of our kits, our airway kit, our cardiac monitor. And as I'm putting I did my med kit first, I did my airway kit, and then I put the cardiac monitor on there. And at the corner of my eye, I see the lieutenant has turned around and is like, got to look at his face. Like, what the hell are you doing? I'm like,
Hashtag science.
Yeah. Always been curious. Right. Now, the base monitor, because I torqued my back recently and was out for a bit, and I had to talk to the gentleman from the workers' comp, right, which he was very nice.
Yeah.
But one of the conversations we had, he goes, so I researched this, and these are like, right at 15 pounds. Because what I'd done is I'd picked up the monitor and moved it down the bench.
Oh, yeah.
And I tweaked my back.
Yeah, that, you know, overextension. Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, yeah, the actual monitor part of it is about 15 pounds. But when you add on the kits and the cables and the, you know, everything, because we have to carry everything in kits that are attached to the side of this thing. I said, yeah, it's around 21 pounds. I weighed it one day. I told him the story and he laughed. And we were good after that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I got kind of a strange look from the fire lieutenant because instead they're weighing all my kids.
Yeah. That's a heavy monitor.
Yeah.
There are
not even the heavier ones. There's definitely heavier ones.
There's definitely lighter ones.
Oh, yeah.
So
I don't even know what we're going to, because the ones we've got are going out of service.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be going with the lighter versions.
Nice.
I think I would be surprised, because I've heard LifePak is no longer making pre-hospital monitors.
Oh, I don't know.
And Philips is going to have one, but they're adapting a European model to be used worldwide rather than having a separate model for the U.S. Gotcha. And I don't know how well it works or anything like that. So, but we're coming up on the end of that 5 years pretty quick.
Yeah.
So.
Well, speaking of superior, why don't we talk about the most definitive airway ever.
Absolutely. I mean, really, if you're going to talk about definitive airways.
Yeah.
This is the most definitive airway you have.
Yeah. Super duper definitive.
Exactly.
And that would be the endotracheal tube.
Ooh, the bougie.
Oh, well, you have to add the bougie.
Right.
Yeah. I know that this is sort of where paramedics start getting into their, like, were you a Mac or Miller guy? And this will all make sense in a moment, I promise. But then you've got the people who, like, I don't like to use a stylet. And then you've got people who, like, I like stylets. And then there's me. Like, yeah, I'm a bougie guy.
So.
All the way.
To explain all of that.
You know what? Why don't we end it here?
Okay.
We'll just leave it.
No, yeah, yeah, we're good at, like, where are we? We're 51 minutes. We got.
Boom.
Yeah.
Done.
Oh, no. So when you're going to intubate somebody, this is a long, semi-rigid tube.
Yes.
With a, in the larger sizes, has an inflatable cuff at the distal end.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're going to insert this, this is intended to only be put into the trachea.
Yes.
And then the cuff will be inflated, thereby sealing the trachea, making a definitive airway.
Absolutely, because you will... That you will breathe into the tube for the lung.
Nothing goes into the lungs unless it goes through my tube.
And it's got to go through that tube to get in there.
Right. So, he was talking about a stylet. It's basically a piece of wire.
Yes.
That goes down that gives...
Like extra, a coat hanger.
You could have... Yes. No, actually, absolutely. I could have seen one day... probably where it came from. Somebody's like, oh, I'm going to use this coat hanger. It's just a long, thin piece of metal. It's been covered... It's been rubberized, so it's not sharp.
Yep.
And basically what it does is it adds extra structure to the tube.
Yes.
And you hear some people, I hockey stick mine or I L-shape mine. Or basically, once you get into the throat, you're kind of pushing your way through stuff and you want some more structure.
So this is sort of where the other airway methods become are superior in that they really don't require any training.
Right.
You can just... You put your thumb on the kind of the lower jaw part there and you pull it open and then you shove it in and then you breathe for them and you're like, it's good. Goal! Actually, I would pay to see somebody go goal after getting the airway.
Okay. So back to legitimate medical speaking. So the other airways, literally a day's worth of training, maybe. And you can be proficient at it.
Yeah, a day is generous.
Yes. As part of a day class.
A day course.
So, ET tubes, I know as paramedics, we have to go in and spend a week in the OR.
A very upsetting week.
Right. Of begging and pleading to be allowed to do things.
And then learning that, because this is, speaking of mask seal, one of the first tricks that anesthesiologists will play, because you are playing in their kingdom, mm-hmm. and they are a cruel people.
They don't have much to do during the day, so...
This is how they... And it's, to be fair, though, it's definitely lessons worth learning.
Oh, it's educational.
But they go like, well, you can intubate this patient when you can get a good mask seal.
Right, you got to be able to BLS mask. Before ALS.
Absolutely. And then you go in like, duh, I got this. And then you're like, oh, no, I can't get this stupid mask to sit around their... stupid face. And they're like, well, I guess you can't intubate this patient. And then you leave and you have to wait a couple hours for the mm-hmm. next one. And that's when they go, oh, we're going to put in an LMA in this one.
Right.
You're like, ah!
Yeah. So,
yeah.
This is something that, is definitely a lost skill.
Absolutely.
And that if you don't do it on a regular basis or you don't train on a regular basis, you're going to lose the ability.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not like riding a bike.
True.
So, Spencer was also talking about a Mac and a Miller blade.
Yeah.
So
what those are is, so to get that tube to successfully go into the trachea, you have to shift some stuff in the mouth, like the tongue, for instance, and you kind of have to adjust the jaw, and depending on the type of blade you're using, and what that means is, so there's a handle, and then there's a sort of a bladed metal stick that plugs onto the end of that. And a Mac blade has a curve, and what it's supposed to do is you're supposed to insert this into the mouth, the blade into the mouth with the handle, and then you kind of take the tongue and sweep everything off to the side and get the tip of that curved blade into a spot called the vallecula,
mm-hmm.
which when you lift up, will pull the epiglottis up and expose the trachea and the vocal cords.
Now, I checked out for a few seconds. Did you mention there's a bright light at the end of this blade?
There is definitely a bright light
at
the end.
So it's shining down, so you can see down the throat.
Because it turns out it's a dark and scary place down there.
Especially when you're in the OR and the person's not letting you tube.
Absolutely. So, yeah, when they're yelling at you, do you see it? No. And so once you get all that, Miller blade is a straight blade instead of a curve. And what this is supposed to do is supposed to actually hook under the epiglottis so that when you lift up, you're lifting the epiglottis and all the stuff off to the to side as well.
So, you, like you said before, there'll be people who are adamant Mac people. There are people who are adamant Miller people.
Yeah. I'm a Mac guy.
I don't care. You're a Mac or Miller? Surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just different techniques. And some work better on some people. I found that on patients who are exceptionally anterior, that the Miller blade works better.
You know, if you get a big enough Mac blade, you can use it like a Miller. Just saying.
So, the Miller blade slides, or the Mac blade, like you said, slides up into a little notch called the valleculum.
Yep.
And that lifts everything out of the way. Whereas the with the Miller blade, like you said, you kind of insert it. I've always gone in deep and then backed up until I saw the opening.
You know, I was doing that for a while, but I found what I would find is that I would go in, and most of the time I'd go in and hit the esophagus, and then as I'm pulling out, I'm like, I don't know where I am, 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 and then suddenly the epiglottis would drop, and I'm like, I've gone too far now. And then I'd dive back in, and they're like,
I don't know where I am, I don't know where I am.
Yeah, I'm lost.
Okay.
I don't know.
Everybody has a preference.
Yeah.
You can also use the blades to go in with what are called McGill forceps.
Sure.
Which are long forceps.
Yeah.
That they look kind of like bent scissors.
Yeah.
But they're not sharp.
Yeah, except they're like pliers. They've got like little handles at the end. They're like, you can grab marbles with them.
Grab marbles or grab anything except for scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
You need something of structure to grab onto. Anything that does not have a good structure just kind of goes right through it.
That's correct.
And they don't use, they're really good as a paddle either to scoop out said
That's true.
Eggs. So you go in, and like you said, you go in on the right side of the mouth and you sweep upward and to the left. Now you do not fulcrum the blade on the teeth.
Yeah, it turns out that'll damage the teeth.
Break.
Yeah, I've seen bent teeth. I mean, granted, they called the code at that point, but the doctor had the decency to kind of push.
You actually lift up, straight up. You don't pull back at all, because that will actually press on the front teeth and can break them. In fact, on the mannequins which you practice with, they will make a clicking sound. I don't know about your paramedic school, but it was $5 a click for my paramedic school.
Yeah,
into the donut jar.
I feel like the most prudent student would just have like one of those little clicker things where you were practicing. I'm not even by the teeth. What's going on? Like, click, click. I don't know, man. $5.
$20, man. We're eating tomorrow.
Ooh, you're done.
So now what we do is you take the tube with your stylet in or not.
Yep.
Depending on how you prefer it.
Yeah.
And you slide that down. And what you can see once you see the trach is you actually see the fake vocal cords.
Yeah.
And you want to slide between those without tweaking them.
Ideally.
In a perfect world.
In a perfect world.
You slide between them.
Yeah.
And then you inflate the cuff at the end so it seals off the airway. Then you have, while you're holding on to it the entire time, you have somebody start bagging, and another person is listening to the lung sounds to see if there's air movement.
Yep.
One of the common problems is you go in too far.
Yep.
And you end up in the right lung.
Yes.
Or the right main stem of the lung.
Yep.
And you have to back up a little bit so you get good.
Just a smidge.
Right.
One of the other problems is that you miss the trachea and you go right into the stomach or down the esophagus, which leads to the stomach.
You get the stomach, you go too far.
How deep is that tube?
We're going to find out.
And, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, the trachea has a distinct shape, but it turns out that if you lift, if you're in the esophagus and you lift up, it also looks exactly that shape.
It can, yes, because the esophagus will collapse in on itself under weight.
Yes.
But as you're lifting. Now, another thing is, if you had a person who's excessively bagging with a BBM, and I had a partner this happened to, so they had distended the abdomen with their aggressive BBM bagging.
Oh, yeah.
And when you go and lift up and you open the esophagus, guess what happens?
Aspiration.
vomitus.
Oh.
All of that releases under pressure, and you will get, he literally just like, tuck and rolled left when he saw this vomit coming at him and barely got out of the way in time.
I'm impressed he tuck and rolled.
Yeah, he just, yeah. I mean, over on his left shoulder. Because generally when we do this, the patient's on the ground.
Yeah.
And so we're laying on our stomach.
Yeah.
Or kneeling.
I feel like I would just close my eyes and hold acceptance.
Hopefully you're closing your mouth.
No, eyes closed. Protect the eyes. Mouth open and just, of course. This
so, but yeah, he just all of a sudden just like, boom, just like abandoned his blade and just threw everything and just rolled. And just this guy just spewed.
And so, everyone went, what?
If you ever see a paramedic moving away from a patient quickly, that's usually because they're getting ready to vomit.
There's something going on.
So now once this is in place, like we said, nothing goes. So if the patient vomits, as long as you've got a good placed and a properly sized tube, they can vomit all they want.
And it will
unless
not.
Unless it comes up to the point of getting higher than your tube.
Yeah.
Which if you did, there's a problem here.
Yeah.
It will not go into the lungs.
Yes.
So.
I guess this brings up the bougie, because we talked about the stylet, which is the coat hanger. The bougie is a soft, flexible tube.
Very long.
Very long.
Probably, what, twice as long as a tube?
Yeah, longer in some. Yeah, I mean, there's some where you're like...
Well, it depends on genetics.
You can't go with those easy shots, man.
Come on, man.
Yeah, there's...
Come on. So, what do you do with the bougie?
So, with the bougie, some people call it a blind intubation device. This is false. I mean, I guess you could try, but I don't think you'd have any success.
No, not at all.
What you want to do is you want to use your laryngoscope and look into the mouth, and then instead of trying to get a tube and with or without a stylet into a small target.
This is the same diameter as the stylet.
Yes.
It's very thin.
It's very thin.
Coat hanger type.
Exactly. And it's got a little, you know, like... hockey putt or hockey stick tip at the end of it.
The other was just bent up.
Just a little bit of a curve. Just a little bend.
Just a little bit of a curve.
Just
too,
a
right?
soft curve. Yeah. And you can pass this far easier into the trachea than
smaller,
you can.
Smaller diameter in the same size hole.
It's like cheating. It's really unfair.
Yeah.
And once you get that in, what you can do is you can slide your tube because your ET tube is, you know, hollow through the center, and you can just slide that over that bad boy and slide that all the way in.
Yeah.
And I've done that multiple times now, and every time I feel like I should be proud, but also I feel like it's sort of like when you steal candy from the baby. Yeah. You're like, I'm happy I got candy, but I mean,
I didn't really work for it.
This really wasn't that hard.
It's good patient care.
Yes.
But it hurts the pride a little bit.
It. Yeah.
So, now some of the contraindications of the ET tube. A lot of training.
Yes.
A lot of specialized training.
Yeah.
High incidence of failure rate. And that people rolling into the emergency room with a tube that's actually in the esophagus.
Yes. Or just failure to get it. They try several times and they just can't get it. And some of that is just, there are some patients who are just exceedingly difficult to intubate, and paramedics are well trained, but they are not the amount. Like, there's anesthesiologists who do 200 hours of training, and they're going like, "This is going to be hard."
Right, not only do they do 200 hours of training, but they're doing this every day they work.
Yeah,
I mean, I may go months without doing it too.
Yeah,
and then we're doing it in a situation that's very non-helpful to the overall success, such as.
In a small bathroom.
In a barn stall with horses kicking the walls on either side of you.
Yeah. Horses are bad people.
Have you ever intubated somebody from the hood of a car?
I have not.
I have done that. Kneeling on the hood of the car, the patient's in the driver's seat.
Nice.
They had cut the roof and peeled the roof back.
Yeah.
And we've been attempting to bag this patient through the window, which... We talked about making a bag seal with a mask is tough in a perfect condition.
Yeah.
Try doing it while reaching in from outside of a car. And I'm kneeling on it, and I basically inverted my blade straight in, looking straight down, tubed the patient, got it.
Wow.
Was a minor god for, you know, a couple hours.
Yeah. And then, that would carry me through the rest of my career.
So
I'd bring that up, like, every chance I get. Well done.
So, it's – when it works, it's – great. It's very definitive.
Yeah. But it is very hard. It's very hard to make it work. And it does, like Mark said, it requires a lot of practice and a lot of upkeep on that skill.
Right.
And so that's one of the big downsides to that. And there's a lot of, I mean, there are a lot of pro tips, you know, go slow, take your time, position the patient more. I mean, positioning the patient
ramping
properly.
The patients,
exactly.
You know.
Taking all these steps to ensure your first pass success. Because if you don't get it the first time, the odds are that you will not get it the second time unless you do something like, you're like, oh, yeah, I should probably, like, maybe I'll try it with my eyes open this time.
Grab me the bougie.
Yeah, grab me the bougie.
You know.
You should use it the first time.
So, you know. So as an adjunct to ETs, we're going to talk about video laryngoscopy.
Yes.
So video laryngoscopy is a relatively new device.
Yeah.
Especially in the pre-hospital setting.
Yeah.
So basically, this is an ET-type blade. It's not exactly the same. It's not a Mack or a Miller, but it's got a camera on the end. So rather than trying to look down the throat around corners into the trachea, you're actually looking at a screen either on the handle like we have.
Yep.
Or a lot of times in emergency rooms, they've actually got a monitor off to the right, which is bigger.
Yep.
And so you'll see the person intubating this patient looking over their right shoulder.
Yes.
Or their left shoulder at something, not even looking at the patient.
Yep.
And there are advantages to this.
There are definitely advantages to this. It's always hard to intubate somebody when you have to put your eye at their mouth hole.
Right.
And for a variety of reasons. Sometimes you just can't get the angle you need to see. You can't, you know, the anatomy means that you're just not going to see what you need to see. Or their mouth is small and they have a giant tongue. There's a variety of, there's a plethora of reasons that you might not be successful in visualizing.
The most successful you'll ever be with endotracheal intubation is on the mannequin.
Mannequins are kind of hard, man.
The most successful you should ever be is on the mannequin.
Yeah.
Because it's in a very sedate setting. I mean, on top of difficulty, on top of the angle you need to meet, a lot of times when we're doing this pre-hospital, we're in somebody's living room.
Yeah.
Family standing there watching you. There's a lot going on around you. There's a lot of adrenaline because you're preparing to carry the patient. You've just come driving code 3 to the scene.
Yep.
You know, you've just grabbed your kits and gone up, you know, 2, 3, 4 flights of stairs to get to the patient,
yeah.
You know, and it's very easy to get very adrenaline charged. So the video laryngoscopy is when being used, it's kind of becoming the standard.
Yeah.
You go in with your tube and you basically do a lever motion. Your hand is parallel with their chin and you lever motion in so you can see what you're doing. And then you have a tube that's built on a specific stylet to go with this piece of equipment. And the way it was described to me was like you're pulling a slot machine, right? Not the same strength, not the same enthusiasm, right?
Money!
Exactly.
We're in.
So, it should angle straight into the trachea.
Yeah. Where I work primarily, we have a video laryngoscope, but it's essentially the same shape as a Mack blade.
Okay.
The techniques are identical to intubation. It's just that on the end of ours, we have a little screen. So we watch everything go in. We look at the screen. Mm-hmm. We see the cords. And then we can watch as it passes through.
It's very interesting because you'll actually see your tube come up the right side of it.
Yeah.
And should go straight in.
But,
so.
There's definitely a lot of different styles of video scopes or video laryngoscopes. And it sort of adds the yeah, mom said I'd never amount to anything playing video games, but like, what now?
Exactly.
But beyond seeing stuff go in, the thing that you really need to do to make sure that we've confirmed that we've got the airway is...
Regardless of what you use, is
end tidal, measuring end tidal.
So measuring end tidal, there's a couple different ways you can do that.
Yep.
So one of the things we do, as soon as the tube goes in, we listen for lung sounds.
Yes.
We get a stethoscope on the patient's chest, and we want to hear air movement in the chest. Then we listen over the stomach to make sure we're not hearing air movement in the stomach.
Truth.
Now, this can be flawed.
Yes. I have seen an esophageal intubation where there were sounds present in the chest cavity.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that we were probably hearing noises transferring from the esophagus
right.
going through the chest.
It can be a big echo chamber.
It was fairly misleading for a moment, but the thing that saved.
And by moment, you mean all the way to the hospital?
No, thank God. No, literally in that moment, actually, Chris was like, "No, this is. I don't think this tube is good. We don't have end tidal, and I don't think we're hearing lung sounds. And I hear sounds in the epigastric area."
Oh.
And so we pulled the tube from a pretty proficient person who had intubated the patient. And
you?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't intubate the patient this time. And I wasn't very good at that time.
Oh,
yeah? I don't think I didn't have the confidence, didn't have the practice.
Yeah.
So, but the end title read zero.
So, like I said, so we listen to lung sounds. One of the other things we do is we look for fogging in the tube.
Yep.
If you're in the trachea and you bag in, as you release, the air will come back out, especially if they're doing compressions.
Yeah.
And you will get moisture in the tube. If you're in the esophagus, that should seal around the tip of the tube, and that way you will not get anything coming back out.
Absolutely.
And so you won't get that. So if we have good lung sounds and we have good fogging of the tube, we're fairly certain.
Yep.
Now, the way we can be definitive on this airway is to put on what's called end tidal CO2. This is either a colorimetric device, which is kind of old school, which as you bag the patient and then they exhale, it will change color.
It'll turn to gold. Gold is good.
Gold is good. More recent is actual end tidal monitoring, where you hook it in, you put a device between your BVM and your airway device.
Yep.
And as it exhales, it actually takes a reading. And in the monitor.
And it'll print out in a digital number.
Mm-hmm. And you'll also see a waveform representation of the breaths.
Yes. And that is by far the best, because it is far easier to objectively defend. Because if you bring a patient into a hospital and you'd say, "I heard lung sounds, and the tube is now in the esophagus." It might have been in the right spot at one point,
right,
but it migrated.
One of the problems is that as you're moving the patient down the stairs, you're moving to the ambulance, you're in the truck, you hit a big pothole in the road.
Yep.
You can bounce the patient. If any sort of backwards pressure is put on that tube, it can slip out of the trachea and into the esophagus. So, this is why every time you move the patient, somebody should be listening to lung sounds.
Absolutely.
You should be listening. You should be looking for fogging, because it can happen very easily.
Yep.
Where I worked before here, back in Oklahoma, a lot of the medics built a little tube. So, God love our first responders, but some of them were known to pull tubes.
Yeah.
Not intentionally.
Yeah.
Just being a little rough with them. This is very much a finesse technique.
Yeah.
And so they would actually make a... It was basically the corrugated tubing from a nebulizer with a corner connector, right? And so you hook the corner connector on the nebulizer tubing, and then the BVM did nebulizer tubing.
Oh, nice.
And so you actually had some play.
Yeah.
Probably not the most efficient transfer of oxygen.
Yeah.
But, you mean, as long as you kept good sats and they didn't pull your tube, you know.
Nice.
Because as hard as it was getting the first time, it's going to be more difficult the second time, because a lot of times if they have a pulse and you've tubed somebody and then it gets pulled unceremoniously, it's going to cause swelling.
Yeah.
And so it's very difficult to get that tube again.
Yeah.
And so then you have a thing on here on retrograde intubation.
Yeah. So this is a pretty cool thing. So they, in some patients who have like tumors or other.
It's not a tumor.
It's not a tumor. Or other, just sort of obstructions that would prevent even, a video game laryngoscopy.
Right. You can have, just genetic malformations.
Yep.
We talk about what's normal for a patient. There's no such thing as a normal patient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What they can do is they can actually go in through the trachea, through the cricothyroid membrane, and then kind of put a guide wire that goes back out through the mouth, mm-hmm. essentially, or towards the mouth. And then they can slide a tube over that as if it were a bougie.
Right.
And are able to get it there. Now, the problem there is it's really not an emergent airway. That takes some time and preparation, mm-hmm. and all of that. So that's more, oh, man, we're going to have to do this. And we've got a little time to kill before we have to, instead of... In our situation, often where you're like
10 minutes behind when you get there.
Oh, this is bad.
Yeah. So, that's airways, definitive airways. Airways that are definitive.
Super definitive. Definitely definitive.
Super duper definitive?
Super duper definitive. I feel like, see, now I feel like I'm copyright infringing.
So that's everything I have on Airways. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, that it goes deep. You could do episodes on rapid sequence intubation.
Right.
And, oh, God, yeah, so much fun.
Which should never be done rapidly.
Yeah, it really should be, like, really slow, methodical intubation.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, okay, well, I think I've got everything. You've got everything done.
Boom.
And you've got an IR to go, right?
I do have.
Thank you all for listening. If you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter at MedSideStuff, MedSideStuff. We're on Facebook at Medical Stuff. We're on Instagram at MedicalStuff52. You can get a hold of us on email directly at MedSideStuff, MedSideStuff, @yahoo.com. Please, any questions, concerns, complaints, you want to hear more funny stories about Chris or Spencer, they're none about me. I've been pretty much pure in my entire
career. You can also call Mark Frankham at
360. I will be cutting this, yes. So, please send us your questions, concerns, ideas for shows will always be appreciated. And we do try and respond as quickly as possible to all messages.
And you can vote who sounded best between the three of us now.
Yes, yes. You now have an accurate representation of just Chris and I, just Spencer and I.
That's
right. And so, vote for your favorite team. I'm vote. So, have a good evening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Toast.